It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Back with us this week is New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat who serves New York's 28th district on the east side of Manhattan. Welcome back, Senator Krueger.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's get right to it. There was an election recently, you may have noticed. Let's get your reaction to the national election and the impact of that election on New York. I want to preface it by saying that support for now President-elect Donald Trump ballooned across New York, 45%, and at least 177,000 more votes in New York this election for Trump than in 2020, and at least 610,000 more votes in New York than in 2016. Your thoughts?
I have to say, I do not actually understand American voters very well, because I am quite shocked, particularly in light of what he said he was going to do and now seems to be prepared to do. I sincerely think many voters, because I'm talking to them, say, well, we didn't really think he was serious about all that, but he is serious about all that. And I keep hearing from younger people things like, well, we know he's a liar and even a criminal, but we find him authentic. And I think, frankly, we're all watching too much reality TV. So I won't deny the numbers outcome, although I will also point out the national data is getting closer to showing his quote-unquote mandate is pretty minimal. And that really the question I have for New York, why did Democrats stay at home? Because, yes, Trump's numbers did go up, as you say, but the percentage change was really due to how many Democrats who showed up for Biden did not show up this time.
Yeah, and it's not as if New York, in terms of Democrats in Congress, did badly. You were able to survive that.
We picked up the three seats. Yes, that was very valuable. Yes.
And Proposition 1 passed.
Since I worked on that for 4 years, I am very happy that passed. And I think that clearly showed that New Yorkers understand and share the values that we don't want anyone discriminated against in our state. So I am very pleased with that. And, of course, the Democrats did just fine in the House, the Assembly, and the State Senate. So, you know, the change numbers for Trump are real. The percentage change sort of explained far more by Democrats not showing up. And as far as Congress and our state legislature, no real change at all.
Well, and what do you make of the fact that Prop 1 has passed now in New York, and we just are witness to the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, now saying, you got to have the right body parts to use the men's or women's room?
You know, I'm often left speechless by things coming out of the National Republican Party. I think this one also leaves me speechless. I don't know where you went to college or what year. I went to college in the Midwest in the 70s. We had co-ed bathrooms then in our dormitories. No one thought twice about who else might be coming into the same bathroom when you were going into your cubicle. And I don't think anybody seriously cared up till now. Thank goodness we have strong law in New York State pre-Proposition 1 under our human rights law and our gender law that you can't be discriminated against based on gender, and that people who end up changing gender are not to be discriminated against in anything, including what bathroom they choose to go to. But again, this is what we're choosing as our culture war. You know, I don't even get it.
Well, and with a new Trump administration certainly means a change when it comes to the environment. We've already seen New Yorker Lee Zeldin nominated to be the head of the EPA. And you have a number of folks on the right who deny that climate change even exists as the wildfires burn all around us here with the dry conditions. And you really want to see now, and I would believe from your perspective, more important than ever, that the governor, Kathy Hochul, signed the Climate Change Superfund Act.
Well, it's not just that act. Yes, of course we should be moving forward in New York State with a whole agenda that is actually required by the CLCPA law that we passed to move forward. But much more big picture, and a climate-denying federal government under Lee Zeldin or anyone else the Trump administration seems to be choosing to run all of his agencies is going to put the entire planet at risk. We are literally at the verge of no return when it comes to climate change and the impacts on all of us, and far more relevantly, all of our grandchildren. And so the fact that we expect pretty much a stop of progress in environmental and climate change efforts under the Trump administration, and even rollbacks of existing accepted law under Zeldin at the EPA, is absolutely the biggest disaster that will come out of this administration, because we won't be able to fix it. And that's what keeps me up at night.
Well, let's continue the environmental discussion, because I know that there's the Trees Act and also the New York Heat Act. Tell us about those and why you believe those are important.
Okay, so the New York Heat Act did not pass both houses, so it's not on the governor's desk to be decided upon now. Although we're encouraging her to think about putting the full act in her budget. She already has, in previous budgets, flirted with passing some of the New York Heat Act. The New York Heat Act is a very simple bill. We already have established through separate law that buildings need to go all electric when they're being built within, there's a city law and a state law. The city law goes in a little bit earlier. But within the next several years, you can't build buildings that use gas. They have to use electric. You can produce or use that electric from a variety of sources, but no more buildings run on gas. And yet we have a separate law that needs to be fixed that says utilities have to run gas lines to any building being built. Why? Why do we need to run gas lines to buildings that aren't going to be able to use gas? It's a waste of resources. And frankly, consumers through their utility bills are paying between $250 and $300 million a year to build gas lines to new facilities that won't be able to use them. So this Heat Act says, we're changing that. Utilities, you no longer have to build gas lines into buildings that aren't going to be using gas. Just common sense, but saving an enormous amount of money for consumers. Then it goes further and says, let's establish some standards of how much any consumer has to pay for the utilities. And we're cutting it off at basically 6% of their income. And if their utility bill goes up beyond that, then there will be a state program that kicks in to make sure that nobody has to pay more than 6% of their income towards the utilities. So it's an affordability bill. It's a common sense, don't waste money building things that we don't need bill. And it's a lower our utility costs overall across the board bill. I think it's a win-win bill. It's been incredibly popular for various reasons. We have not been able to get it past the assembly.
Is it because of business? You're going to hurt business if you do this.
You're actually not hurting business, because there are alternatives that many businesses are rushing towards. And if you are the kind of business that will actually have to use gas, there is a section of the bill that allows the PSC, Public Service Commission, which oversees utilities, to give you a waiver and allow you to use gas if you need it. Again, this is not for existing facilities. This
right.
is for anything new coming online. So we factored that in. So no, there's no actual concern for businesses. There is a specific utility in Western New York who apparently doesn't want to do anything but gas. And so they're the ones sort of sending out false information to people, panicking people. Really, the bill is quite simple. It's a win-win for everyone, and there is no business that would not be able to have gas lines if they show that this is really what they needed for whatever it is that they're producing.
Now let's talk about the Tropical Rainforest Economic and Environmental Sustainability Act. That's the TREES Act. It's headed back to the governor's desk.
Yes, that is a bill that I'm not sure she's going to sign. I'm continuing to try to negotiate with her administration over any concerns they might have, although they don't seem to be open to having more discussions about it, which disturbs me. This also is a pretty simple bill. It says, if you want to do business with the state of New York selling things to us under contract, and we buy billions of dollars worth of things, the state government, then you will have to commit to not buying products from the tropical rainforest, because the production of products is destroying the natural rainforest, and the loss of rainforest territory is in fact destroying the environment far more rapidly than anyone ever imagined. In fact, Joe Biden was down there at the Amazon just the other day talking about how critical saving the rainforests are for the world. But the U.S. continues to buy large quantities of products, so they tear down the rainforests. They sell the tropical hardwoods, which are critical to let remain growing in the forest. They turn the destroyed forest land into plantations to produce soy, cocoa, palm oil, all destructive to the land, destructive to the environment, and pushes indigenous people out of their communities. And we need to stop buying those products. So this is not a law that says no one can buy those products. This is a law that says if you want to sell your product to New York State, you need to sign a document confirming that the source of your product is not borealis forests, tropical rainforests. And the truth is a huge percentage of the large corporations in this country have already voluntarily signed to do this. There's alternative product sources for almost everything anyone would ever think to buy in the tropical rainforest. So it's actually also good for New York. For example, our forestry business, we have hardwoods here in New York State. They'll sell more because ours are not from tropical rainforests and are not considered at risk. So our forestry wood industry will do better using U.S. and New York-specific products. We also don't have a problem finding soy products, cocoa products, palm oil products from places other than the tropical rainforests. So it would basically say you may have to change the source of some of your ingredients if you want to sell to us. But most companies won't even have a problem. But our taking the action to stop using products from these parts of the world is a signal then to the entire country we should do the same thing. And the EU, the European Union, already passed this bill for themselves. So frankly, if you're a New York company and you want to have an international market for your products, you are so much better off following the same rules to sell to New York, because then you're going to be more competitive in international sales, which I don't know any company who doesn't want to sell more product, and they're perfectly happy to sell to Europe if they can, but they won't be able to unless they meet the standards. So there's an international movement down this road, and it's absolutely a win for New York businesses if we're at the front of that line.
Well, let me play a little devil's advocate, not necessarily on the Trees Act, but on environment in general, because I talk to the Republican side of the aisle regularly for this program and recently had on the minority leader, Will Barclay, of the Assembly. And guess what he keeps repeating over and over again, Senator Liz Krueger? Our guest this week on the Capital Connection, he keeps saying, well, why would New York take all this responsibility when we're only responsible for a small percentage of the pollution in the world? This is the argument the Republicans use. Why spend all this money? Why make New Yorkers pay? You know, we only spit out a very small percentage of the world's pollution.
Well, with everybody saying that, that's why we have a climate crisis. So everybody is responsible and everybody needs to do something about it. That's the answer, because with all due respect, there is no wall we can build tall enough to keep out the climate damage to people who live in New York, because we only produce so much of that damage. Why should we be responsible for all that damage? Because we live on this planet and you can't build a wall for your air and water and environment. That's answer one. Answer two, it's not more expensive. Green energy has already proved to be much less expensive per kilowatt hour than the kind of energy we're using now. It will actually save New Yorkers money, make our businesses more competitive because they will have lower utility costs. And that should be something that my Republican colleagues should be very excited about.
Maybe you'll all get together in a nice leaders meeting in the coming session and talk this all out. That would be great.
Liz, I'm happy to talk about these bills and these issues to anyone at any time. Open invitation.
Fantastic. I love it. Well, you know, there's a big issue going on right now, and that is the congestion pricing plan for New York City. It's back on. Governor Hochul paused it for, I think it was 5 months, before re-upping it now with a smaller price tag. That would be a $9 toll below 60th Street in Manhattan during certain times of the day, as opposed to $15. You know, she was quoted as saying she goes to where it's hard, not where it's easy. And this is a hard one, right? Because so many attacks coming on this particular proposal point out that it's basically another tax on New Yorkers.
Well, it's not another tax because you don't have to pay it if you choose not to drive into Manhattan below 60th Street. And there are alternatives. It's called public transportation, which is what we're trying to save and expand. So it is not a tax. There is no basis for it to be a tax because you don't have to pay it. And I represent half of the zone, and it's the most congested area of, I think, the world at this point. This is the most congested city, I believe, in the country. And the congestion is not only increasing health problems for the people who live and work here, it is also slowing down everything to such ridiculously slow miles per hour that the business community has evaluated it costs them billions of dollars a year with people sitting in traffic in Manhattan. And that if they didn't have to sit in this traffic, that there would be far more productivity, far more revenue for businesses, and the business community is in support of congestion pricing. The New York Partnership, the real estate community, they're all on record in support of this. And frankly, no one, I think, is denying we need a strong 21st century mass transit system, because otherwise New York City won't continue to be the economic breadbasket, not just for people who live down here, but for the entire state of New York. We are the revenue generators that send our tax revenue upstate New York to the counties that don't have as strong an economy. And if we don't have a functioning city that people can come in and go to work, have a mass transit system in and out of the city and other states in the region who also all come to New York City for work, then we've sort of killed the golden goose that's producing the golden eggs. And even the example of MTA and congestion pricing, I have heard from a number of my upstate Republican colleagues how important it is that we move forward with congestion pricing, because without it, the MTA had canceled or delayed its contracts to expand its modernize its rolling stock of buses and subway cars that are built in upstate New York communities. And those companies were talking about laying off hundreds and hundreds of people in upstate communities. So, you know, just because somebody uses a word doesn't make it true.
Well, I wonder, with the current national political situation, obviously with the Republicans now fully in control, you know, President-elect Donald Trump, a former New Yorker and someone who likes to get back at people. He's been quoted many times talking about revenge. And I wonder if you're worried at all. Like, for example, right now we're seeing this Trump criminal case being delayed. It looks like the prosecutors don't want to tuck it under the rug or get rid of it. But how much are you worried that the president of the United States, when he takes office, will look to hurt New York?
Well, isn't it amazing that you can actually say that, and the possibility is it's true, that this country actually elected someone to be president who's not only been found guilty already of, I think, 34 felony charges with more cases in process, but a president of the United States who's going to take an oath of office to uphold the Constitution on January 20th, who says, I am going to punish people who didn't politically agree with me. Like, if we heard that coming from any other country, we would be beyond up in arms about this. But this is what we're facing. So, yes, I think it's quite possible that he will try to take retribution on anybody he defines as his enemy. He ran someone against me for Senate because I didn't like mixed martial arts, and he owned a mixed martial arts company before he even thought about running for president, just for the record. So I'm probably on the enemy list. But my job as an elected official is to stand up for the people of New York State, to take my oath of office seriously, to uphold our Constitution and our laws, and to do what I believe is in the best interest of the people of our state, even if I'm being threatened. So I guess I can't stop him from threatening. I guess I can't stop him from going after me or other people who think like me. But that's not my job. My job is to do what I have to do to stand up for New York, our people, our state, our Constitution, and our laws.
Yeah, Liz Krueger, our guest on this week's Capital Connection, state senator, a Democrat. It could get ugly, right? Especially around immigration, if you start having federal immigration authorities raiding places in New York.
Yes, it could be extremely scary. And remember, he said he was going to do it last time, so he already significantly influenced people's behavior last time. And I think he is far more serious about prioritizing this now. I certainly hope that the community of people who supported him or didn't support him, but know that mass deportations of non-citizens will have an enormously damaging impact on the economy of every state in this country, that they will rise up and tell him, you know, it was a nice PR line, but it's a really bad idea. I've already watched on national news shows people representing farmers talking about the devastating impact on U.S. farm production if there are no workers on their farms, and that there will be no one to pick the crops or do any of the work on farms that needs to be done, disproportionately in other parts of the food industry as well. Disproportionately impact on communities that hire migrants as day laborers, which is all over the state of New York, as home care workers, as child care workers in their homes. I mean, these are people that we have been hiring to live in our homes and take care of us. And now they're going to be thrown out of this country. Migrants and other people without legal status or complete legal status, because there's always all these people in a gray area who are working, are paying taxes, even though they'll never get benefits in return. They are some not law-abiding? Yes, some of us aren't law-abiding, but the vast majority are law-abiding people who came here for a better life, just the way my four grandparents came here to escape anti-Semitism and pogroms in Eastern Europe, just like almost anyone else you talk to and you ask about their family history and how they ended up here, same story. So for him to actually follow through on this will have devastating impacts, not just on these families, but on all of us. So I hope there's someone he listens to who will point out some of this to him, but I fear that he has very carefully surrounded himself with people who will only tell him every idea that goes into his head is the greatest idea in the history of the world. And frankly, leaders who aren't prepared to have people tell them when they're wrong are destined for disaster. And that's what I'm worried about here.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. Our guest has been New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat from Manhattan. Senator Krueger, always a pleasure to speak with you. I appreciate it. And I know we'll have more conversations to come in the future.
I'm sure we will. So thank you for having me on.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.